Hey, everybody, happy Monday evening to all of you out there streaming here on YouTube. Appreciate all of you tuning in on a very happy Monday to all of you because the Texans came up with a huge win yesterday over the San Francisco 49ers, 26-15. This is the Houston Texans Collective. Great to be with all of you here on YouTube on a Monday night. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. Be sure to hit any likes, all of that good stuff, as we welcome you in here on a Monday to talk about yesterday's win, looking ahead, all of those things. We got a lot to get to here on a Monday night. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. To my right is Landry Locker, of course, of the Locker Room with Landry Locker and SNL. Beneath him right there is Reggie Atatula, who is co-host with John Lopez of In the Loop on Sports Radio 610, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sports Radio 610, and of course, Cody Stutes of Texans football, or of Houston football with Cody Stutes and SNL as well. It's great to be with all of you on a Monday night here. And we have a lot to get to. Very happy Monday because we got a win here and the Texans kind of keeping themselves in that swamp in the AFC right now at 3-4. But we got rookies to talk about. We got this defense continuing to dominate to talk about as well. We've got press conferences for sure to talk about at some point along the way here.
Press conferences? I don't understand.
Tonight with all of you. There have been press conferences the last couple of days, Reggie, and things have happened. Yeah. Just sit back and relax, baby. You're going to hear some good stuff. But we've got that to talk about too. But guys, as we launch here on a Monday talking about yesterday's win, to me, biggest story, and you can see it right there on the left-hand side on our lineup of topics right there, the offensive turnaround, and I think the biggest topic there to me is C.J. Stroud. I think you could make an argument that yesterday's performance by C.J. Stroud, I know he's had performances where statistically there have been more yards and touchdowns. I know he's had performances where maybe the stakes were higher in certain games. I think you could put an argument together that yesterday was the best performance of C.J. Stroud's career, given the not just the early season stakes of going 3-4 versus 2-5, the fact that statistically he was really good in this game, but who he was without yesterday, Nico Collins and Christian Kirk, and maybe that's a blessing in disguise, who knows, but he took inexperienced players, elevated their level, took what was given to him, and had one of the most efficient days of his career. And he just looked at, to me, guys, he just looked in complete control throughout the game yesterday. Did exactly what he wanted to do, took what the defense was giving him, used his legs when he needed to, 9 of 16 on third down. I thought C.J. Stroud, if you're a Texans fan, that was an amazingly encouraging performance from him yesterday.
Yeah, you guys good, by the way? The chat got me. I think I kind of take away from this that the superpower is still the superpower. I think that I know we're talking about the offense, and I agree on the offense, but I think the defense and what they did is what's impressive to me. And I think that's going to be the most encouraging thing for this team is this defense allows the offense to get graded on a curve. And that I don't know that they're going to be able to settle for field goals against Denver, maybe not even Jacksonville, for sure not Kansas City and Buffalo later on in the season. But I think when you hold Christian McCaffrey in check like they did, I thought George Kittle was going to go absolutely nuts yesterday. They kept him in check outside of the touchdown. And you instill fear. We talked the word last week with Nick Kelly when it came to the QB sneaks was fear. And I think that the fact that Christian McCaffrey only has 8 carries is kind of a strong strong praise of what people think about this Texans defense. So, yeah, I don't disagree with you that Stroud was fine. I do think this is kind of a yeah, but much like Baltimore, you're playing a backup quarterback, depleted team. I think it's impressive that San Francisco has the record they do. But for me, the biggest takeaway, yeah, the offense is good. It's nice they didn't give up sacks. But the defense being a superpower is what really my biggest takeaway was from this.
Wait, hold on. Stroud was fine. Okay, all right. I see you there, big dog. Like, no, the defense, obviously, we know what this is, man. We know what this is with the defense. And Christian McCaffrey only had, what was you said, 13 touches? They had 44 plays total. The time of possession was absolutely insane in this game, right? Yeah. I think that there needs to be a level of credit to the offense being able to do that. Don't ask me how sustainable that is because – you know, there were some things that you have to acknowledge with the Niners not being a team that pressures very well, not being a team that historically blitzes all that well up until this game where they blitzed the most that they had. But if you can manage to keep relatively clean on the offensive line, I'm with you, Sean. I think that C.J. Stroud's control of this game looked really good, and I'll give him a lot of credit for this one particular statistic that's burned in my mind. 7 of 9 for 111 yards yep. against Stroud when he was in pressure in this game. Like, being able to handle pressure, obviously, and be able to turn that into productive, you know, productive passing, productive, you know, plays, that's what helped them have a ton of really long drives. Now, of course, they didn't capitalize a lot of those times in the first half. You know, three of those possessions are field goals, and then one gets in the end zone. You need to get better at that. But if you are able to stay clean on the front end, which has been the big if for this team, CJ Stroud, at least in this game and hopefully continuing on, having a grasp of the offense, being able to get the ball out to admittedly a lesser wide receiving core than some of the ones that they played with earlier on in the season without Nico Collins at the very least, depending on how you feel about Christian Kirk. I think that that speaks to his capability of handling circumstances. He still also has room to improve with that, right? There were still some instances where they had a high low and he's hearing Jarrett Wayne on the low route when you have Dalton Schultz over top. You still have instances where CJ Stroud is sailing footballs. There's still even opportunities to have an even better game within that. But with that, he was able to orchestrate, and you got to give him credit because that helps the offense be able to get into the red zone, even if they're not as maximum efficient with it, and it keeps the defense off the field, makes them maximum potent when they can get off the field as well.
I like how positive you guys are being today. It's good. It's good. It's a good improvement by everybody.
Starting positive before you got to start with the goodness.
Where we ever get to be positive, you know, it's great. Look, this offense is conducive to protecting CJ Stroud, getting him comfortable, and then keeping him comfortable. And when he gets uncomfortable, how quickly can he get comfortable again? Because you mentioned it, Reggie, a couple of these moments here or there, or you got to go for a field goal instead of keeping the drive alive, or a pass is, you know, a little short on second down and they don't convert third down, things like that. Like, some of that stuff has turned into a chain reaction of bad before. And it's happened in this season in their losses, where if you don't get what you need, it just kind of piles on itself and it turns into something way worse. But they were able to, even when Stroud kind of had a moment where it's like, okay, it's not, he's not in sync, he's not lined up, they got right back into that, and a large part of that was because they finally were able to protect. I mean, there were times where they had six offensive linemen on the field. There were times where they had six offensive linemen, and they kept the tight end in to block, which is what happened on that big Jalen Knoll play that got them right there knocking on the door. So there were better moments from C.J. Stroud and the stuff that he's in control of, which is one of the biggest elements of his game, the stepping up, the ball placement, and some of the decision. There's still room for improvement on it, and they protected well. First time they haven't allowed a sack in a game that Stroud's started and finished in the regular season since Atlanta in 2023. So good job by the Big Uglies.
And I also want to say that I think it was a good adjustment. I think John Harris has been begging for – I kind of rolled my eyes, honestly, at it, even though I know I respect John and his knowledge, but he's been begging for Blake Fisher to be a big part of the offense all season long. Like, he's been the biggest proponent of the extra offensive lineman that I've seen. And we've seen it in doses, but I think we saw it – was it 26 times, Cody? We saw
26. Blake, yeah, it was 26.
Reporting eligible was basically like in your – I went to bed hearing 57 is reported eligible last night because of it. So – I thought that was a good adjustment by the offense. I thought that was good to see. I've been begging for this, and I think this is one of the good things that the places that Nick Caley has stopped at did very well. And context clues led you to believe that it would probably be a thing immediately. Maybe it just took some time, but we saw multiple slot receivers making plays, and that's something that I think is a quarterback's best friend, especially when you have protection issues. So you have Braxton Berrios, you have Jalen Knoll doing what they do. And I think that's just it's a good job that Nick Caley did of helping out an offensive line and not just leaving them on an island on their own. So I thought those were two adjustments that were very offensive line friendly and by result, CJ Stroud friendly.
I hate that I have to ask this question. How much does that remain the case when it's not an absolute necessity, right? Like, I hate that I have to ask it, but we've already seen them do good things and then walk away from them, right? You talk about the Blake Fisher, and I'm just going to be the jerk. It was, if you know that your tight end's not going to be able to block, they know what's coming, might as well put in somebody who's more apt to block, even though I don't even know how great of a blocking job Blake Fisher did necessarily, but you got that big body in there. We've been talking about getting Jalen Knoll reps all this time, and it was when you had no one else almost to get this done. Like, I do hate to have to bring that up. How much will they stick to the things that are working as they are working?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah, like, go ahead.
it's almost like the guy who cheats on his wife and then all of a sudden he's at every dance recital and he's getting her flowers every day. Like, it's that sometimes like your own actions make you lead to like being, you know, doing things that you probably should be doing anyways. And I'm with you, Reggie. I have trust issues and I haven't forgotten what happened a week ago today, where some of the unthinkable stuff that happened played out. And I do find myself somewhat wondering if we see Christian Kirk come back and his return comes at the sake of Jalen Knoll, Jaden Higgins, and this receiver rotation that we're seeing right now. So that's kind of my fear. Nico Collins is a given. You put him in there and figure it out. But these the young kids that we're seeing making plays and all that, I just wonder, do I trust this offensive staff to be able to keep this going and make the right decisions and without eliminating the stuff that we're seeing that we've been wanting to see for a long time?
Man, I don't know how you can't. Like, the fact that they were doing these things with no Nico Collins on the field is such a huge deal to me. You know, like that – we went into the postseason the last 2 years with only Nico Collins as the – he was the singular guy who could get open in this receiving core. They went into the postseason the last 2 years with Nico Collins – and then a group of guys who couldn't get open. It was John Mechie, and it was Robert Woods, and it was – there's probably – and Xavier Hutchinson was one of them, but he's progressed as a football player. He's found ways now in year three to at least get open a little bit. And so that to me was – if we're taking signs of progress away from the game yesterday, God, I can't imagine how you could be an NFL coach and look at what happened yesterday on the field and say, okay, once these guys are back, we've got to somehow go away from that at all. And I'm not saying like you keep pushing with that group. Like, obviously when Nico comes back, to your point, Landry, like Nico's the guy, but CJ had to gain so much confidence in those other guys yesterday. And it wouldn't have happened had Nico not been hurt. Maybe given that they won, maybe that's a silver lining in this whole thing. But the fact that they found solutions in the passing game, not named Nico Collins and really not named Dalton Schultz either. Dalton Schultz only had 2 catches for 24 yards in that game yesterday. Xavier Hutchinson had 5 catches for 69 yards. Jalen Knoll had 5 catches, including the big deep shot there. Woody Marks did things in both the run and the pass game. Jaden Higgins got into the end zone. He had 4 catches in that game. Like, to me, that was a huge step yesterday for this team once Nico Collins comes back. If those guys, particularly those Iowa State guys, are able to maintain the confidence that CJ Stroud has in them, that's huge. And the Blake Fisher thing, you know, with the jumbo sets in there and with them going with, like, you know, major pass protection. Seth made this point this morning on Payne and Pendergast, which is, yeah, it's cool. You can run 5 guys out there in patterns, but if you only have 5 guys protecting and they're not good at it, you're never going to be able to deliver the football. If you've got 6 or 7 guys in there protecting and you've only got a few guys out there running patterns, but one of them gets open, CJ Stroud's probably going to find one of these guys, you know. So it's a balancing act, and this is where you have to take advantage of the fact that you've got a guy who has some elite traits at quarterback. So I was really encouraged with the things that not only went on in the game yesterday, but what they could mean once Nico comes back for this offense.
I would love to know if this is something that builds for CJ Stroud and they can almost kind of take the training wheels of Blake Fisher, the extra tight end, the extra blockers off. Like, if they can get him comfortable and it's like, okay, now instead of 7 blockers, we're going to give you 6 blockers. Okay. And then there's just one more guy you could get open and you could throw it to. And then this kind of just builds in for Stroud. And so maybe we are seeing in some of those 5-man protection situations, okay, there's a little bit of heat, but he's stepping up into the pocket. It's there. He's delivering the ball, maybe taking a big hit, like a bone cruncher like he took in 2023, but he seemed to really avoid in 2024. But this has got to be just huge for him to remember early in the season. It's like, oh, this is still coming together and I didn't get as much work with these guys. And it's like, well, now it looks good in a game. You're getting the ball on that first drive. Basically everybody touches the football. Like, it feels like this is the basis of something that, yeah, I know they're going to play better defenses, but this is the basis of something that they can bring every single week and get to that point where it's like, oh, like they're good at something. Like, they're really good at something and they bring it to every game every week.
I'm holding off though on that weaning him, like taking off the training wheels, blocking wise, pulling it down to 1 blocker. I don't know if you guys felt like I did. I was disappointed in Robert Saleh in that game. Not that I'm going to be mad about it. I'm happy that he went this way. It felt like he did not take any of the lessons that defenses that have played the Texans this year have utilized. I don't think I saw them stunt on the defensive line hardly at all. And that felt like the open sesame to try and get into the backfield. Not saying that I want teams to necessarily go out here and do that. I just know how this league works. It's a copycat league. You go and find what works and you try and do that. I was surprised that they didn't do none of that. So I'm not certain that this line holds up under the worst circumstances, but I'm glad that when teams decide to just rush four in a straight up way or even sim blitz sometimes that they can hold up. I just know that they've been ear holed a good amount when they get those twists starting to go. So keep Blake Fisher in there for just a little bit longer. That's all I'm saying.
A little bit longer.
Yeah, Saleh, I think, kind of like D'Amico, doesn't like to stunt. I think it's a lot easier not to stunt when you have Nick Bosa. I think you might want to kind of adjust and not, you know, that was the whole talk last week or a week ago was stunts. So there was that. I think there's probably a chance that San Francisco 49ers aren't pleased with either Kyle Shanahan or Saleh after the loss. I don't know whether it's smart or not. It seems like if I was – I don't follow it much. I know he does more than – but if Christian McCaffrey only had 8 carries, I don't think I would want that too often. I thought that was a little bit surprising by them. But I thought
– 49ers collective Cody is mad right now about the Christian McCaffrey.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's a thing or what. I thought that – And in fairness, we went into this game saying that they had a big coaching advantage. I still probably believe that a little bit, but or probably a lot. The Texans ended up holding up. I will say this. I don't want to but this too much. But this 49ers team, I know their record's good. This is somewhere between the Baltimore Ravens team that the Texans beat and the Jags team that they lost to. It's a backup quarterback. It's a depleted squad. And I think the best thing about this is a lot of times in the NFL, they always talk about how it's how you respond. In a short time, in less than a month, the Texans have an opportunity to – they have an opportunity. Are we going through Pender notes right now?
I'm pulling out my Pender notes because I'm just looking at who the Niners beat this year just for my own edification. Yeah, it's okay.
I was honestly worried if I wasn't well actually
or anything. I'm just pulling out my notes, yes.
But yeah, well, it's always dangerous when you pull out the Pender notes. But I think that this is a good opportunity because the last time the Texans beat a depleted team with a backup quarterback and had a chance to get back to 500 against a good team, they failed. And they in a very short time, in less than a month, 2 games later, they have that exact opportunity. And it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. I know Denver's going to be without – it looks like Sertain's not going to play. But Denver's a good team. I don't know how good they – I mean, we can sit here and debate.
Good team.
We can sit there and debate their ceiling and all that. But Denver's a good team. And I think Denver would be the first unquestioned good team that the Texans faced. And they get an opportunity now to get back to that 500 – Mark, coming off this win, whether you want to but it or not.
Yeah, that's a great point, Landry. Like this would be one where all of a sudden, like this would be a win where on Monday, people are talking about this win over the Denver Broncos. Like there's not a lot of people. The only talk I'm seeing today of the win over the Niners is in the Niners context. Nobody's really talking about the Texans having proven much by winning that game yesterday, even though, like honestly, other than a couple glitches and the red zone stuff, it was, you know, everything else was, I mean, like literally almost perfect for the Texans. They had almost 500 yards of total offense, other than the end of the half where the special teams just had a complete brain fart. And then in the second half, they had that one completion to Juwan Jennings down near the goal line there. The Texans played this thing almost perfectly throughout the game, and yet the final score was 26-15 because they couldn't operate in the red zone other than the Jaden Higgins touchdown.
All right, it's like Seattle because I think the Texans beat San Francisco's ass. If you just look at the score, you might think it was a little bit close. Now,
it was not.
But it was not, and it's the same thing with Seattle where D'Amico said, "Well, it's a one possession. Y'all got y'all's ass whooped. Like that had no business being that close."
Yeah, so that's exactly right.
I think it's kind of like a balance. And I also think it's funny because the game Monday and the game Sunday were similar yet opposite in that at halftime, when the Texans were down 14-6 against Seattle, I was like, how in the hell?
Yeah.
And then when San Francisco was down 16-7, I was like, how in the hell are they only down 16-7?
Yeah, that's what I was saying to Seth this morning. I'm like, that was my lead into the show this morning was how do you go 15 days and have your worst performance of the year? And then you've got like four sleep deprived days and you have your best. I thought that was their, I know it wasn't by margin their best performance of the year. Like they beat the Ravens by 30 and they beat the Titans by 20, you know, they shut out the Titans, whatever. Like that was given the opponent, given the situation, given the circumstances, yesterday was their best performance of the year. And they did it basically when they didn't really get back to work until Wednesday and arriving home at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. It's just wild. Seth's answer to that was matchups. He just thought like, hey man, like the matchup for the Seahawks, just not a great matchup for the Texans. This, especially given the way that San Francisco chose to play this one, was just a way better matchup for the Texans.
Yeah. Styles make fights, but I'll agree with you on their like best game because if for no other reason, their self-proclaimed recipe to success, they hit it. Like they had the sheet music in front of them and they hit the notes. I will be intrigued to see how easy that is to replicate that particular song against different opponents.
Well, that's the big thing too, though. Like that's you Tennessee only mattered if they did something good in Baltimore. And then the conglomeration of those two only mattered if they could show it again in short order. Well, they didn't show it in Seattle. It looked terrible. Like it looks like they went backwards, but then they show you something again here in this matchup with the 49ers. And it kind of allows them to, as Landry put it, it's a very similar situation. Yeah. Beating the 49ers, showing it against the Falcons or the Ravens and the Titans, that all matters a lot less if every time a defense with a pulse comes in here, they beat you. But if you go do it against a defense like Denver, who I know they're not going to have pass Surtain. Like, that's a damn good defense, and that's a defense that you would talk matchups. You get a lot of X's in the matchup when their defense is out on the field and your offense is out on the field. That's a tough one to deal with. Like, you show it against them, and it's like, now I can really believe you. Now I can really understand what you're doing on offense. This is who you are. This is what you can showcase against a really good defense.
Yeah, and you look at the AFC right now. There's eight teams with winning records, and right now – four of them have three losses. If you beat Denver, then all of a sudden five teams minimum in that playoff race have three losses. So that's how significant this game is. It's not only a good team, it's a team that you got to make some ground up against. And if you establish yourself in the loss column with over half of the teams that are in the playoff race, the division might be long gone with the way the Colts are going. But you set yourself up nicely. That's why this is a big one. Like they got to get back to 500 before week 11 or by week 11. They have to. And if you win this one, man, the only things that have been kinder to D'Amico Ryans, I said this earlier today, the only things that have been kinder to D'Amico Ryans and the local media and fans has been the AFC South. And you have a massive opportunity if you win this and you set yourself up with a game against the Jags, who you know pretty well, and then the Colts.
Six of their final 10 games are at home. Three of your four losses is to the NFC. So unless you get down to like the seventh tiebreaker, those don't matter. If you go on a run here and you're the Texans, you're inherently going to be setting yourself up to win all the tiebreakers moving forward. All those teams in front of them, other than Pittsburgh and New England, if I'm not mistaken, they play. They play the Colts twice. They play Jacksonville in a couple weeks. They play the entire AFC West over the next several weeks, and they play the Buffalo Bills. So they're going to get their shot. This isn't anything where they got to sit around and scoreboard watch and see what everybody else can do favors for them with. Like they are going to get a chance head-to-head to beat all these teams here. So it's a huge opportunity. The way the schedule lays out, In terms of degree of difficulty, it's a hard schedule. There's no question about that. That's what happens when you play a first-place schedule and you're crossing over with just the wrong divisions this year. You're crossing over with the toughest divisions in each of the two conferences, the West in the NFC and the West in the AFC. Can't do anything about that. You got to play who's in front of you. But this is going to be a really incredibly fun next 10 weeks, especially if they're able to win this Denver game, man, because Jacksonville is gettable in week 10 at home. And Tennessee is certainly gettable anywhere, Tennessee or Houston or, you know, Zimbabwe. I don't care where they play. You should beat the Titans. And then all of a sudden you got the Bills coming here. Like you take care of your business. You take care of that business against Denver. I think that leads into winning those next two games. And that Buffalo game on Thursday night becomes really, really intriguing. So there's no shortage of opportunity here on the schedule moving forward to get yourself back in this thing.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts is you laid it out. You want to do what Will Anderson talked about, make sure you know you're not low in the playoff pecking order. Yeah, the AFC South's pretty tough to catch. You know, you're going to need some people to help you out on Indy's schedule, and you're going to have to take care of your business against them. But you play everybody in the tiebreaker scenarios. Like, and you already got Baltimore. Not that I think they're getting back into this thing or anything, but you already got Baltimore. You need to add Denver to the belt. Do your best against Jacksonville. I mean, you can't lose that tiebreaker to them. You don't want to be sitting there. I guess the last thing you want to do is be sitting there. I know you want to make the playoffs, but you don't want to be seven. Like 6-5 is where you want to be. You do not want to be in that seven spot.
No. Get it over with. Just get in the dance and take your superpower on the road. Beggars can't be choosers. They got to get up to 500.
Beg and I will choose.
Okay. I know we've got like three other topics we got to get to over here, but as long as we're on the schedule topic, would you rather, other than against the Texans, obviously, would you rather Indianapolis just keep wrecking shop so that by the time week 18 rolls around, they're trotting Riley Leonard out there at quarterback and just take your wild card medicine? Or are you guys still rooting? Like yesterday, you're like, come on, Titans, let's go. Let's, you know.
See 2019 Titans. They go to NRG and the Texans. Yep. Basically, they start A.J. McCarron, and then the Titans get in and they get to the AFC Championship game. So, yes, I would say
get in the dance.
Just get in. I mean, it might be nice for this team to be uncomfortable, but but before that, they got to prove that they can beat a good team. And that starts this Sunday. I think this was a season saving dub. I know a lot of people get mad. I know Seth gets pissed when you say it's a must win, when it's not actually a must win.
About the math, Landry.
Shout out to Seth. He's much smarter than I, but I do think if they lost this San Francisco game, I think in the wake of how crazy last week was and this, I do think it kind of comes tumbling down, especially if you're looking at Denver as a desperation time. So I do feel that way.
You guys want to hit the rookies here for a second, because that was a big story yesterday. Jalen Knoll, big play. Jaden Higgins in the end zone. Woody Marks, over 100 total yards again. This looked like Tennessee win Woody Marks yesterday, including a couple massive plays. That 50-yard check down, which flipped field position early in the game, and then the 23-yard run, which didn't set – ultimately, they didn't score a touchdown, but that was the drive that they had after Tennessee had cut it to one score. Well, I don't know how the three of you guys felt. They cut it to one score. I'm like, how is this a one-score game right now? You know, how are they letting Tennessee – I'm sorry, not Tennessee. Not letting – or how are they letting San Francisco hang around? And then Woody Marks, that 23-yard run, was the catalyst to at least get a field goal and provide the final margin there. And we should throw Ariante Ursary in here. I know it's easy to talk about the three rookies who are in the box score, but when it's offensive line, if you're not complaining about them, it probably means they're doing pretty well. And I've seen the PFF and the pressure numbers for Ariante Ursary the last couple weeks. And frankly, they've been pretty good. It looks like all four rookies that they took on the offensive side at the, you know, top four rounds of the drafts were contributing on Sunday.
I will say this. This is a nobody's talking about. Ariante Ursary, big Chiefs fan growing up. He's Broncos. He might have his best run blocking game of the year. It might be like Jefferson Fest times Ridgemont High style. He hates the Broncos. So that's a nobody's talking about. I think that the rookies, I just hope that it continues. The one thing that I've noticed, and I asked Jalen Knoll about this, I want to ask CJ about this on Wednesday, is, and I think, I don't know if y'all noticed this or not, but it feels like a lot of the time that the communication with Higgins is not such to where a lot of times the balls aren't catchable. And I think yesterday he got rode out of bounds. He probably needs to be a little bit stronger there. And CJ threw the hands up, kind of, I think he was asking for the flag. But despite the fact they've made some big plays, it feels like sometimes they're just not on the same page. Him and Knoll, for some reason, whenever they throw the deep ball, there is some good-ass communication there, and CJ Stroud's dropping dimes. You can make a case that CJ Stroud's two best throws this year have been two, maybe three, have been deep balls to Jalen Knoll. The one at the end of the first half against Seattle, the one late against Seattle when they were kind of trying to make it a game. And then this one, the 44 yarder or whatever it was.
Oh, dude,
that was beautiful. They got some crazy chemistry when it comes to the deep ball. And I think that's something that CJ Stroud misses. And I think there's probably some extra satisfaction in that. I think this Texans offense has kind of lacked speed. He has it. And CJ Stroud likes throwing the deep ball to Jalen Knoll. And I hope that continues. But that's the thing that I notice most about these rookies. The Woody Marks thing, we've already known. But the deep ball that we've seen in the last 7 days, the chemistry that CJ and Knoll have, pretty impressive.
Not just the last 7 days. Like, honestly, you could take this far back. It feels like early on, I was like, huh, that's an interesting kind of lack of connection, for lack of a better term, with him and Higgins, which doesn't make sense because Higgins was the dude who got more one reps when we talk about training camp compared to Knoll. I think for me, one of the things I go to is Knoll being in that slot, but not specifically just in that slot. It's a lot of overs. It's a lot of, like, posts. It feels like that kind of deep crosser type thing seems to jive really well between those two. But either way, like, it's again, something that we continue to see. Knoll just gets open in a way that feels comfortable for that dude, and it makes it even more inexcusable to not utilize his talent, especially in a place where you need more people that separate. That was what we were asking for. In a general sense, we were saying this team needs playmakers. What we were specifically saying is we need people that separate and create, get open, because you knew Nico Collins would do that. Jalen Knoll has demonstrated time and time again in his short career that he does that. Higgins, somewhat to some points, and it's odd that, again, CJ seemingly either goes high for him, and maybe it's because of the type of routes that they seem to run him with. I don't know specifically, but that Knoll thing is very clear. And maybe, yeah, Cody, do you have some more on that? Because it does feel like maybe just that straight vertical stuff is a little bit tougher to get the connection on.
It feels like sometimes they treat Jaden Higgins like rookie year Nico Collins, where it's like, oh, you're tall, run down the sideline. Down the sideline and go catch that jump ball.
Oh, man. You just put Cully and Tim Kelly on this staff right now, bro.
And then you watch Jaden Higgins, and he's got the touchdown out of the slot on the play where CJ, you know, adjusted the play at the line of scrimmage. He's got the touchdown yesterday on the motion, and he kind of runs out from, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. And it's like, oh, that over the middle stuff, because he's a big body and he's not afraid. Like, that's pretty useful. But he also played basketball, so you have to run him down the sideline and just throw him a deep ball. And it just hadn't always, like, there's a little rookie year Nico with the size, but, like, they also use him in other ways where it's like, oh, that's far more in his wheelhouse, and he's more comfortable doing it right now, and Stroud's more comfortable getting him the ball in those situations too.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So, it was good to see the rookies making a bunch of contributions for sure. Cody,
can I go back to Tay? Because I did forget to highlight this, right? Again, I think that it's good that he's continuing to show himself. Like, he's looked about as good as any other rookie tackle that's played this year.
At least he's on the field. The guy in Kansas City can't even get on the field.
Great point. I really do hope that Kansas City Chiefs growing up thing versus the Denver Broncos comes in, because Nick Bonito and was it Jonathan Cooper? Not going to be fun on the edge. I just wanted to make that clear.
No. I will say, I do – the one thing about Arianti Ursary that is very different from basically all the other offensive linemen is, like, we do see really high highs.
Yeah.
And we're still, like, establishing what the best version of Arianti Ursary is.
The lows are expected, though, with him. That's the one thing I will say. Like, you're kind of expected with him.
No. I understand that. But, like, it's a roller coaster, but the highs are very high. And the potential for it is a lot higher than, like – like, the best version of Laken Tomlinson has played football 4 years ago. The best version of Juice Scruggs is probably not very good. The best version of all the other guys, like, it's like there's a lot of hope associated with how good he looks when he's high. And then he's a rookie at left tackle. So naturally there's a roller coaster element to what he has to deal with. But he has bounced back from poor performances more often than not. So that's another tool to have in the tool belt there. Is like, you're going to get beat here and there. Like, Don't let Seattle kicking your ass carry over to a paltry San Francisco situation. And he didn't. And he played really well at that left tackle spot. And so I am intrigued by the highest of highs of Arianti Ursary, more so than some of the other offensive linemen that are in this organization.
And if he can just get traction heading into the back end of the season here, it'd be a nice thing. There's no way that this is how, when Nick Caserio traded Laremy Tunsil, he envisioned the left tackle position playing out. And this is, you know, and that's on Nick. You know, he signed Cam Robinson, you know, went into the draft, maybe hoping to get somebody a little higher up their board at left tackle, even after they moved back into the second round. You know, I think there was, you know, we've heard rumors that they wanted to move back in, and, you know, Josh Connerly and Josh Simmons are both there. I don't know if Simmons is really a Texans guy, but Connerly sure feels like one. That it's a mid-second round rookie that they're breaking in at left tackle. To me, there's no way that this was the plan that they envisioned when they traded Laremy Tunsil. And if it's starting to work out, it almost feels like not house money in a way. Like you put yourself in this position if you're Nick Caserio and the Texans, but it's, you know, like it's at least, at the very least, it's been, you know, an encouraging last few weeks for Ariante Ursary compared to what the first three games of the season looked like, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I'll just say, let's keep Blake Fisher near him if you have to.
Yes.
Make sure Harrison Bryant's over there to just throw his body around and get in the way, and even Dalton with a little chip. It's not Island Ursary time. Don't do that just yet.
No. But at least they're acknowledging that that's the case. You know what I mean? Like I'm not talking from a front office. I'm talking from like a coaching staff standpoint. Like, yeah, recognize like, okay, you got this rookie out here at left tackle, man. Give him some help out there. At least they were doing that, and it seemed to work out in the last game.
You hear Cody right there? He called two guys by their first and last name, and then it's Dalton. Yeah, I smell a puff piece about Dalton Schultz coming up. Football.
Hey, it was National Tight End Day. Let the man cook, man.
Oh, the worst. The worst.
Let the man cook.
What's puffy about him actually holding his teammates accountable? That's not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. You were asking a lot of Dalton Schultz questions today.
Oh, you can see this. He hadn't even told me. I promise you that something Dalton Schultz is coming out very soon. That is so obvious.
He had the Aziz of the offense, Dalton Schultz. I've often said that.
The Aziz of the offense. Well, along those lines, let's mix in from HOU misfortune. Good positivity early on from Landry. D'Amico will be pleased.
I did say, yeah, but I did minimize the Dubs. So yeah, they won. It was a good, it was their best win of the year.
It's positivity, man.
Yeah, but yes.
Positivity.
It's the first time too. We should probably throw a celebration. First time anyone's ever said anything positive about D'Amico. So yeah. I feel like I'm witnessing. Wait, is that Bigfoot? No, it's
Sasquatch. All right. Hey, Cody, you want to get the people up to speed on Prize Picks here while we're rocking and everything?
I sure do. Prize Picks is daily fantasy. If you never played daily fantasy, get signed up with Prize Picks. Use our code Texans when you get signed up, and you're going to play your first $5. You're going to get $50 of bonus cash instantly right after you play that first $5. And we've been putting together some entries here on the stream. We're going to have on the community page of this channel, so you need to subscribe, like, and be ready for the community page. We'll put the prize picks for the Texans game on the community page later this week, so be on the lookout for that. But Prize Picks is super easy to use. You're just predicting more or less on given stats, and you're looking at these games here, this game for Monday Night Football. It's just more or less on yards or passing touchdowns or fantasy scores, and you put it together, you put the entry together, and sometimes you can 20 times, 100 times your entry. It's so easy. Prize Picks, code Texans when you get signed up, and you're going to play your first five and get $50 headed your way, courtesy of our friends at Prize Picks.
Okay, so we got to get you our picks for the community page before the Texans game this week.
Woody Marks over yards, spoiler alert, give me that. Over receiving.
So more receiving yards for Woody Marks, no matter the number, huh?
Last week it was 17. How much are they going to overreact? But 17, I'll take it.
Landry's going blind. I love the blind more than. Woody Those Marks, are my favorite ones.
Woody Marks higher than yards.
I might immediately go more for Jalen Noel. Just call my shot now like Landry's doing.
Okay. I am blindly going less than on Bo Nix passing yards, whatever that is. Because between the fourth quarter of the Giants game and between the entirety of the Cowboys game, I think those Bo Nix numbers are going to be inflated on Prize Picks, whatever it is. Blind. You can put it down now, Cody. Put it on the community page now. Just fill in the number when it comes out later.
I'm writing it down right now.
Less than whatever Bo Nix passing yards are. That's what I'm going with. And hey, who gave you more than on Justin Herbert rushing yards last week? And it was more than you were done by the middle of the first quarter. Sean T. Pendergast. Mm. Rob Van Dam.
I got it. I felt it.
Hey, Cody, I'll give you my blind pick later. I just wanted to let you know.
No. Yeah, it's all blind picks. We're doing all blind picks. Later. This is a Stevie Wonder. The Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles lineup. We're going all blind picks this week, man. Okay,
there we go. Right. I like Reggie being the smart one here, waiting for everything to show up.
No, it has to happen
eventually, you know?
He's the smart one, but he's not the fun one. We go blind, baby. Yes, yes. I'm just kidding. Reggie's a lot of fun. Let's talk for a few minutes about this Texans defense. Landry touched on them in kind of the open here to this episode. But I don't know if I can remember a Texans defense pitching what was up until that return that the special teams gave up at the end of the second quarter there. Like for 29 minutes, this defense was essentially pitching a perfect game. The Niners had run 10 plays. They'd gone 0-3 on third downs. They hadn't gotten a first down. They punted, you know, three times. And then the Texans proceed to basically possess the football the entirety of the first half. The Niners could have possessed the ball longer if they'd just taken three knees each time and just let the play clock run. Like, literally, like that at least burns 2 minutes. They had 5.5 minutes of possession time in the first half of this game. This defense is going to keep this. We just listed all the teams they're going to play over the next 10 weeks, and there's some rough ones in there potentially, right? I mean, the Colts have been a juggernaut. Kansas City's Kansas City. Buffalo looks like they figured some things out this past week. Denver coming in this week and not easy. This defense is going to keep this team in all of these games, I feel like. This is an elite defense right now.
It's the superpower. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It is 100% the superpower. It will be a big test against Denver. I think they possess some of the same challenges. Looked like R.J. Harvey might be playing a little bit better too. They're finally implementing him, much like the Texans are implementing their rookies. I think that this defense, though, they can hang any time. It's just going to be interesting to see how they handle Denver and how D'Amico handles Bo Nix, first time seeing him.
Yeah, superpower is the right word to use in so much as I don't really know how much it's about the other team, right? I thought Seattle had a very particularly interesting wrinkle that they would throw at the Texans, and for a little bit, it felt like they got the Texans a little bit in their heads. Texans linebackers just staying back, not getting upfield and triggering in the ways that they typically do. At some point, they said bleep that, and then all of a sudden, here we go. Like, they were able to do some great things. Like, I don't worry about who this defense is. I will admit that I think far too often about the Jaguars of 2017 as helmed by Blake Bortles on the offense, but except not helmed by that, helmed by an incredible defense that got them to an AFC championship game, and how that all fell apart when that defense looked over and were like, why are we carrying the entirety of this sofa? You know what I mean? Like, have you ever been in that circumstance where you're helping somebody move and you're like, it's three of us here, but one of us has got the majority of the weight, right? And I do wonder at times, like, are you going to be in a circumstance where you end up with the defense carrying a majority of the sofa? You know what I mean? So a game like you had yesterday very much felt like, as long as you give somebody else to carry a little bit of this sofa, this defense is going to get you to where you need to go, right? Like, that's going to be exactly what needs to happen. Because, again, I think that your secondary started not where we expected, funny enough, and they have stepped up to that level. I'm still not even sure that that Stingley is, like, feeling all the way his best, right? Like, I still think that there's room for him to look more like the all-pro Sting that previously was there. Kamari's looking good. MJ Stewart, at some times, they tested him. And how much does that get stronger with more reps in those moments, right? I think there's still things with this defense to even play a better brand of football. And they were pitching damn near a shutout for a good long time. So, like, I feel great about this defense, and nothing has really shaken my resolve in that at all.
Sean, you mentioned Rob Van Dam. I'm going to mention Eddie Guerrero, because that was a very Eddie Guerrero move by Derek Stingley at the end of the game. When the San Francisco 49ers had some momentum, it was two-possession game. They're trying to score before the two-minute warning, and my man drops to a knee right in front of the snap, and then I'll be damned. That holy water in Houston worked.
Yeah, man.
Right out there after one play. It made Mike Elko and Texas A&M very happy. They just got fined for faking injuries. I'm not saying Sting isn't a little bit banged up, but I will say not only is he good, he's a smart SOB, and that was some savvy stuff from Derek Stingley. And
Mamacita.
Don't think I didn't notice it. Don't think
you
I
want some Latino heat.
I feel like that's a hate Latino crime that you saying that into the microphone heat. Like that.
Latino heat.
That's going to haunt my dreams.
From this, I'm separating myself from this.
That's going to haunt my dreams. I will say I definitely expected more out of Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle in this matchup, because those are two players that if you're trying to think about, okay, is there a softer part of this Texans defense than the secondary and the defensive line? Oh, well, it's the linebackers and it's Jalen Petrie in coverage. And again, 49ers collective Cody is very mad that Jalen Petrie wasn't in coverage on George Kittle and on Christian McCaffrey, because that, and even Aziz was right there step for step the whole way with George Kittle. It's like, well, it's George Kittle. You're not outplaying him for that football in that touchdown throw that Mac Jones had. And like, there was a lot less like, oh, screw it. George is over the middle. I'm just going to rip it to him. Oh man, McCaffrey's out there in space. I'm going to get it to him and let him kind of make some moves. Like, there's a whole lot less of that. And sure, the Texans deserve a lot of credit for they made the middle of the field messy, and I'm sure that was very hard to get the ball to Kittle. I know they started helping out with Kittle in some of the chipping and trying to slow down what Will Anderson was bringing to the table in that situation. But I thought both those guys were going to be a much bigger problem than they were, and the defense seemed not only ready for them from what the secondary and what the line needed to do, but also what the linebackers had to do as well.
Also, something that shouldn't be as large as it is for this defense: they didn't step on their own, you know what, right? Like, I think that that's the thing that really gets me about this defense. The thing that beats this defense oftentimes is themselves, third down, not getting off the field, or having some laundry end up on the floor, right? If they are able to do that again, like, they're looking at one of the most menacing dudes in all of football in Christian McCaffrey, and they made him look downright toothless. You know what I mean?
I would say D'Amico's probably pissed about because it wasn't quite Tampa Bay where it's 4th and 12 and Baker Mayfield runs to extend the chains, but if they don't complete that 3rd and 17 or whatever it was down to the 1 yard line to Jennings, game's over. Like, it
game's over. Yeah.
Interesting. Like, that's a quote, little flip, game over. So like, they didn't execute there. MJ Stewart kind of just got out manned on that one, but that would be kind of the nitpick situation where 3rd and long to end the game, different situation, but that's probably something they're probably going to focus a lot on film.
Go ahead, Cody.
I would also say while we're criticizing the honor student for a 90 instead of a 95, Will Anderson's got 5 penalties on the season. It's not quite
good. Have 7.
Yeah.
It's not quite the Laramie Tunsil of the defense just yet, but he's got 5 penalties.
Not quite, but sort of.
One of them this week extended a drive. They had gotten the stop, but Will was offsides. It extends the drive, and ultimately the 49ers ended up scoring on that drive. And Will Anderson got away with 2, I mean, should have been roughing the passer calls. He hit Mac Jones in the head, in the face, and most officiating crews call that. And maybe it's because it's Mac Jones and he doesn't get that call, but most guys, first quarterback, most guys you're going to go up against here in the next few weeks are going to get that call. So Will Anderson, the 5 penalties, you can live with an offsides here and there, but in the key moment, you can't have that. You're already good enough to beat, you know, Miskovitz or whatever the guy's name is. You don't need the extra step, okay? You got to be careful with those quarterbacks' heads, because next thing you know, the laundry's coming out on the field. And if you don't think Sean Payton's going to be bitching to the officials about that.
Yeah, no,
that's going to he might show them on an iPad before the game, like, look, like, it's – That's going to be a point of emphasis from Sean Payton for sure.
He'll be all over that. Just a few things reacting to what all you guys are just saying. There's 2 plays in this game where if those plays don't happen, it might be a shutout. The kickoff return at the end of the first half and the Juwan Jennings play, that Landry was talking about. Those two plays don't happen. This game might be 26-0 instead of 26-15. I think tackling was a big thing in this game also. Like, you look back to that, the Tampa Bay game is the one I was thinking about coming into this game with McCaffrey. Like, they gave up 170 yards rushing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and a lot of it had to do with tackling. They weren't getting pushed around in that game. They just were sloppy the entire game. Number three, I just can't stop laughing about the idea of 49ers collective, Cody. That makes me laugh every time that you bring it up. The last thing is, Cody, I want to ask you, because I feel like among the four of us, you were, as we've talked throughout the season on this stream, that you were the most critical of the Jalen Petrie contract extension in the offseason, 3 years, $39 million. And we haven't talked about it really at all, probably since like week two. And I'm just curious, Jalen, I feel like Jalen's had a pretty good season so far. I'm curious how you're feeling about that here seven games into the season.
Yeah, he's had a really good season. He hasn't been exploited in coverage like I expected a lot of teams to do. And I still feel like teams don't go after him as much as they should. He's around the line of scrimmage and he's a demon. And my simple response to the contract would be, it wouldn't have been that much more expensive if you hadn't paid him already. So you didn't necessarily have to get it. You didn't save a bunch of money getting to the discount early.
And you also see how he holds up. That's the other thing. Like, that size, I'll knock on wood for him, but like, Bob Sanders is one of the best freaking players that I can remember playing that type of role near the line of scrimmage, and he couldn't hold up. And we saw Jalen Petrie. We've seen him 1 year in this role, and he ended up getting banged up. So I'm with Seuss. I don't think it would have been much higher.
Yeah, he's definitely a junkyard dog around the line of scrimmage, and he's had his really good moments in coverage this year. But you know, there's also been a couple of times he got picked on. Puka Nacua in week one, he got picked on.
Yeah.
They got him in Seattle last week early on. So there have been moments, and I don't know why us and everybody who watches the Texans collective understand that you should throw the ball at Jalen Petrie when he's in coverage, and NFL offensive coaches can't figure it out. But the longer it takes them to figure it out, the better it is for the Texans.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, as we wrap up here, 3-4, obviously a huge difference from 2-5, which it could have been coming off of the game on this Sunday. Expectations now, not only for this weekend against the Denver Broncos, but is this a team that you guys feel like they're the 9 seed in the AFC right now? A couple of wins get you right back. A couple of wins, depending on what happens above you, probably get you back in at the 7th seed maybe. Who knows, depending on what happens. How much did what happened this past Sunday affect you guys' expectations on what this team looks like moving forward over the next few weeks?
I don't know that my expectations have really changed. I need to see them beat a good team before that happens. But I do think that the opportunity they have increased, where at minimum 5 teams will be tied with you in the loss column, 5 of the 8 that currently have a winning record if you beat Denver. So I don't expect much more. But 5-5 has been my expectation from the jump, but they do have a massive opportunity because of what went down in San Francisco, in Houston
against San Francisco. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that the expectation changes a lot for me for the same reason, right? Like, I've seen them have a really good game where they do the things that they purport that they want to do and then ultimately backslide. I need a little bit more assurance. I will give them all the credit in the world for doing those things. But when it comes to like what they have put on paper that shows me that I can prove, you know, I can, you know, project forward what their performance is going to be, I don't have it there. So as far as like what the expectation is, it has to be, if we're being logical, in the similar place with optimism that, hey, Nick Caley can come out and produce a game plan that looks all right, that the offensive line can keep CJ upright. And when CJ does have that opportunity, he can pick apart a defense. Like, those things are good. All those ifs that you need as precursors, I can't guarantee that you're actually going to have those. So I'm in the same place.
And my thing is, it's really extended that prove it period where, okay, this team is better than Baltimore that they just beat. This team that they just beat is better than Tennessee, but they're not as good as Seattle. They're not as good as Denver. This version of the 49ers is probably not as good as what we think the Jaguars can be. And when they come to town in a couple weeks. So you got an opportunity. And Landry, I think it was after the Titans game, it was, hey, in this Titans, you know, if the Titans are the bread of this section of the sandwich, get the 5-5. Well, 5-5 is still alive. 5-5 is still alive. You can get to 5-5. You got the opportunity with some of these opponents to turn this into 6-4. then you know, be my guest and go about it. But it just kind of has extended that prove it window that, hey, Tennessee matters if you do good in Baltimore. Baltimore matters if you do good in Seattle. Okay, you didn't. Now San Fran only matters if you do good against Denver.
Yeah, 5-5. Well, 5-5. If I had to guess and do look ahead lines on what these games are going to look like over the next 3 weeks, 9, 10, and 11, 5-5 is what the odds makers are saying the Texans probably should be after week 11. I'm guessing they'll be favored at home against the Jags and favored on the road against the Titans. So those theoretically are two games you should win. That gets you to 5 wins. That's what makes this game this Sunday so goddamn important, is if you not only what the optics of it would represent in beating the Denver Broncos, a 6-2 team, but what it mathematically would represent in terms of you getting back to 4-4 and now having two very winnable division games in front of you here before you've even played the Colts one time. You have an opportunity to go into the two Colts games with a 3-1 division record, and you have a chance if you win this game on Sunday to be 6-4 going into that Bills game. If you're five and five going into that Bills game, given that you were 0-3 to start the season, and everybody at 0-3 probably would have signed up for 5-5. If I had to guess, if you're a Texan fan at 0-3, said, look, to use the Mark Vandermeer term, without knowing what's behind door number two, would you sign up for 5-5? I would have signed up for 5-5. That said, it means you're going to have to win a couple of big heavyweight matchups over the final 7 games of the season just to get back to 10-7. And that's counting on beating Arizona at home, Las Vegas at home. I mean, those are the only two I think that you feel really good about over those last 7 games, because those games are Buffalo, 2 Indy games, Chargers, Chiefs. You know, like that's tough sledding right there. So that to me, like this Denver game, man, like you win this Denver game and now all of a sudden you're looking at a strong possibility of 6-4 and a 4-game winning streak going into what is a really difficult patch of schedule with Buffalo, Indy on the road, KC on the road. I mean, this is a monster, monster game on Sunday for this team. What do you guys think about it before we get out of here?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's a big one. It's a big of opportunity as they can take advantage of. I don't expect them to win it, but we'll see. I mean, it's a coin toss right now, pretty much in Vegas.
One point dogs. Yep. So, all right. So, fellas, enjoyed it as always. Want to remind, well, thank everybody in the chat first and foremost. Everybody who came in here and listened tonight, give us a like, give us a subscribe, tell a friend. We do this every Monday at 6 o'clock here on YouTube. And a big reminder, too, if you want to jump in and play some daily fantasy prize picks, a great place to do it. $5 gets you $50 in lineups instantly. All you got to do is use the code Texans and play along with us. And, Cody, we'll have our picks on the
Texans Collective community page
coming up later this week. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. But, yeah, be sure to keep spreading the word about the Texans Collective. Landry Locker, the locker room with Landry Locker. You see that sweet neon sign in the background right there.
10:30 tonight. We'll talk
10:30
about
tonight. Okay. Yep.
For sure.
And we didn't even get into the press conference today. So that'll be,
it's fine. It's cool. I mean, well, we will tonight, but
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you didn't get enough press conference talk at this one, get over to the locker room at 10:30 tonight. Right.
Yep.
But can you tell us whether you're good though?
I'm great. Nothing changes today compared to yesterday. It's all fine.
I appreciate that D'Amico did a little impromptu well check on you. That's so kind of him.
Me and DJ. Yeah, he was.
So nice.
The irony of D'Amico Ryan's saying you guys good when and like doing it like in a quizzical way is literally how all of us look at the Houston Texans right now. Like, you guys good?
You all right? You, like, sure.
Like, not for the same reasons in the same way, but like, yeah. I don't know if you're a good football team, but like, you guys good?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to tell. There is some irony there, and it's funny because I already have that on the rundown. But yeah, D'Amico's he's one of the most praised coaches in the history of this city. He's gotten plenty of praise from me. He owes me nothing. I think he feels like the media owes him something, and I think that's kind of where the disconnect is. And I'll just leave it at that. We'll talk about it at
10:30.
Yeah,
10:30 tonight on the locker room with Landry Locker, Cody Stutes, Houston Football. You can see all the signage behind him right there, and the two of them, Landry and Cody with SNL, do a tremendous job. You guys do a great job in the open locker room too as well. I can just tell you from somebody who's on the air, like the content that you guys are bringing from the locker room is second to none. So you guys are doing great with that as well. Reggie Adetula, In the Loop, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sports Radio 610. I'm Sean Pendergast, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Sports Radio 610 as well. Did you have something you want to say, Cody? I saw a finger.
No, you're just gesturing to what you're talking about.
Oh, you were? Oh, okay. Yeah. I got you.
He wants Landry. That's Reggie. That's
he wanted Reggie. To say, he wanted to say, look out for the Dalton Schultz puff piece coming.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Hey, man. I love my emails I get from Houston football. I love it. Including your report cards, Landry. Okay. You right there. Yeah. I love the report cards.
My favorite is Sean's camera's mirrored. He doesn't know what he's pointing
at. Oh, is it really? Oh, damn. Oh, crap. All right. Landry, right over there. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
Right by the bumper.
You guys suck. All right.
Fun with cameras.
We're about to end stream right now.
Yeah.
Every stream has got to have an old, and that old is Sean T. Pendergast. All right, we're done. We are out of time. Time to watch some Monday Night Football.
Reggie, up the hose.
Oh, yeah. I gotta keep up for the hose. My bad.
Thank you. That
would be a shame. All right, we are done. We'll see all of you next Monday at 6 p.m. You can find all these jackasses wherever they are throughout the week. And you can find me at 6 a.m. tomorrow on Sports Radio 610. Until then, end stream.